Donald Trump remains defiant in the face of the most serious criminal charges against him yet.
This is the persecution of the person that's leading by very, very substantial numbers in the Republican primary and leading Biden by a lot. So if you can't beat him, you persecute him or you prosecute him. We can't let this happen.
Plus, the U.S. Secretary of State addresses global hunger and accuses Russia of using food as a weapon of war.
Every member of the United Nations should tell Moscow enough. Enough using the Black Sea as blackmail. Enough treating the world's most vulnerable people as leverage.
And what is to become of some of the world's most important and endangered coral reefs? Today is Friday, August 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London in Washington. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty Thursday to four charges, including criminal conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election won by Joe Biden. On social media, Trump termed these latest charges against him as election interference. Details now from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
Amid chants of lock him up outside the courtroom from a crowd of protesters and supporters, a grim-faced Donald Trump appeared before a federal magistrate. As the criminal case was read, Trump shook his head to signify disagreement with allegations that he broke the law in seeking to overturn his presidential re-election defeat nearly 3 years ago. The arraignment took place immediately after the former president was fingerprinted and booked. This is Trump's third arrest since leaving office. A state-level case in New York involves hush money payments to cover up an alleged extramarital affair before he was president. Another in Florida is a federal case brought by a special prosecutor charging the former president with crimes connected to willfully retaining classified documents he took after leaving the White House. Despite facing a total of 78 felony charges, Trump remains the overwhelming front runner for next year's Republican Party presidential nomination. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Our coverage continues with VOA's congressional correspondent, Katherine Gibson, who was outside the courthouse.
Not guilty. That's the plea former President Donald Trump entered Thursday in a Washington courtroom just down the street from the U.S. Capitol that was attacked on January 6, 2021 by rioters attempting to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Trump answered charges handed down from a grand jury of American citizens based on a U.S. Department of Justice investigation, alleging he committed conspiracy to defraud the government, obstructed an official proceeding, and conspired to obstruct an official proceeding. Trump said in a news conference later Thursday that he had the constitutional right to free speech to voice concerns about the election.
This is a persecution of a political opponent. This was never supposed to happen in America.
But his own vice president, who could be a key witness in the upcoming trial, disagrees.
I want the American people to know that I had no right to overturn the election. And then on that day, President Trump asked me to put him over the Constitution. But I chose the Constitution.
Trump, who is the current frontrunner for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, is not under arrest and will undergo a trial in the upcoming months.
We're in sort of uncharted territory. He can certainly run right now under indictment because he's not been proven guilty of anything, right? He's just been charged with crimes. And the way this will play out is we won't have a lot of these decisions till next year, possibly even after the election.
Trump also faces criminal charges in New York and Florida related to allegations of campaign fraud and mishandling of classified documents.
This, in some ways, is the most serious because it really goes to the heart of our democracy and how we count people's votes. But on the other hand, Trump is going to argue that he believed this to be true, that he believed that he won the election and therefore that he was not defrauding the United States.
Outside the courthouse Thursday, the former president's supporters said they still strongly support him.
I really believe that he's defending the people, and we're in return showing our support to him with our freedom of speech.
But for many Americans, just hundreds of yards from the Capitol Capitol that was attacked. The charges are a sign Trump is being held accountable.
It's very important that this is all being documented officially in writing so that nothing happens like this in our country again, because this was a breaking point.
The trial date for the charges in the Washington federal court will be scheduled soon. Trump is said to go to trial in Florida next May. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Donald Trump is the first former U.S. president accused of trying to hold on to power by overturning a free and fair election that he lost. If the allegations against him are proven, it would show just how dangerously close the United States came to a constitutional crisis. And that has legal experts considering what it could signal for the future of American democracy. VOA's Carol Van Dam posed the question to criminal defense attorney and former CIA officer Jack Rice.
I've spent a lot of time working around the world in a lot of war zones. Afghanistan, I was in Iraq, I was in Kosovo. I was certainly when fights were going on between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And I've been in places, parts of Africa during Darfur and other times. And what I can tell you is that there is this notion of instability when you're talking about power shifting from one power source, power base, if you will, to another. And that's been a problem worldwide. For whatever reason, in the United States, there was this notion that we had an institutional bedrock that was so solid that this couldn't possibly happen in this country. And many, many, many people really thought that was the case because of this transfer of power question and the ability of a sitting president. I can take you to places like Uganda, like Kenya, like the Soviet Union, like Republic of Georgia, like Thailand. The list goes on and on and on and on. And it feels like a worldwide issue, except the U.S.,
right.
The oldest
democracy. That's what I was going to ask you about. This was nearly unimaginable before the Trump administration in this country. But it's not so strange in other countries where you had a history or track record of coups, dictators, like some of the countries that you mentioned. So does this mean that the U.S. is at a turning point with this kind of challenge to its democracy?
Yes. I hate to say it so clearly, but I would argue that it actually is. Because if what you get is not just one man, if this were just one man whistling into the wind, I would say whatever. If it were even one former president whistling in the wind, it's not. It's one former president. All of those were running as part of this two-party system and 3 in 10 Americans. You combine those together and what you're getting is something that says, if we don't like the outcome, we're going to ignore the outcome. This puts us in a camp, which is the largest camp in the world, which is everybody else. I mean, I think about the idea of even Ronald Reagan talking about America as sort of this shining city on a hill, this idea, this beacon that sets them apart, that makes the U.S. different than everybody else. Frankly, if we're accepting, has been argued by this president, honestly, this former president, and how it was done by his supporters, if we can argue that that is acceptable, there is no shining beacon on a hill. If there is a beacon, that light has been ripped from its towers.
Criminal defense attorney Jack Rice speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken chaired a meeting of the U.N. Security Council Thursday in hopes of gaining commitments for concrete actions to combat food insecurity and famine around the world, highlighting global conflicts that worsen it, including Russia's invasion of Ukraine, noting Moscow's recent withdrawal from the year-old deal that saw nearly 33 million metric tons of Ukrainian grain exported to the world.
Since Russia pulled out of the arrangement on July 17th, ignoring the world's appeals, grain prices have risen by more than 8% around the world. Kenya's foreign ministry called Russia's move, and I quote, a stab in the back. The Kremlin claims that it tore up the deal because international sanctions were restricting its agricultural exports. In reality, sanctions explicitly exclude food and fertilizer. In fact, at the time it abandoned the initiative, Russia was exporting more grain at higher prices than ever before. And what has Russia's response been to the world's distress and outrage? Bombing Ukrainian granaries, mining port entrances, threatening to attack any vessel in the Black Sea, no matter its flag, no matter its cargo.
While acknowledging the efforts of Turkey and others working to reinstate the deal, Blinken urged members to tell Moscow that enough is enough.
Every member of this council, every member of the United Nations should tell Moscow enough. Enough using the Black Sea as blackmail.
Enough treating the world's most vulnerable people as leverage. Enough of this unjustified, unconscionable war.
Meanwhile, Ukraine and its allies are preparing to mobilize global support for a peace plan during talks that Saudi Arabia is hosting this weekend. Tensions are escalating along the Poland-Belarus border as Poland, a NATO member, sees the possibility of a military incursion. Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Mirosława Gongadze reports from that border.
This week, residents of the eastern Polish town Belowezha, near the Belarusian border, have reported incidents of Polish border violations from Belarus by two military helicopters. The Defense Ministry has confirmed these accounts, informed NATO, and deployed additional troops to the area. Polish Prime Minister raised alarm about the movements of Russian Wagner forces in Belarus toward the Polish border, warning about possible provocations. Poland's government accused Russia and Belarus of using migrants to destabilize Poland and other EU countries, calling it a form of hybrid warfare. In response, Poland has constructed a 186-kilometer-long, 5-meter-high steel fence topped with razor wire, cameras, and surveillance equipment. Polish officials caution that Wagner mercenary group may disguise themselves as Belarusian border guards to assist illegal migrants in crossing into Polish territory or pose as migrants to enter NATO countries. Currently, up to 4,000 Wagner mercenaries stationed in Belarus close to the border with Poland and Lithuania in an apparent attempt to increase pressure on NATO and EU members. Mirosława Gongadze, VOA News, Belowezha, Poland.
We're following these other stories from around the world. The United States could soon offer to put armed sailors and Marines on commercial ships traveling through the Strait of Hormuz, according to two U.S. officials Thursday, amid alleged attempts by Iran to hijack vessels in international waters. Israel's Supreme Court Thursday began hearing the first in a series of appeals against a judicial overhaul being unfurled by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which set off an unprecedented domestic crisis. And hundreds of thousands of flag-waving young people from around the globe gave Pope Francis a raucous welcome Thursday to the World Youth Day Festival in Portugal's capital in a sign of youthful support for the 86-year-old pontiff and his calls for inclusivity and economic justice. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists using data from the European Space Agency's CHEOPS mission learn more about an extremely hot and bright Neptune-sized exoplanet. The planet is called LTT-9779b. It's situated about 2.5 million kilometers from its host star, completes one solar orbit in just 19 hours, and is surrounded by metallic mirror-like clouds, making it the shiniest exoplanet found so far. CHEOPS shows the exoplanet reflects 80% of its star's light. By comparison, Earth reflects about 30% of the sun's light, Venus about 75%, but Enceladus, a moon of Saturn, reflects 90% of the light it gets from the sun. LTT-9779b was first discovered in 2020 by NASA's TESS Space Telescope. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. The White House is closely watching the crisis as the U.S. Embassy prepares to evacuate staff from the West African nation of Niger. With coup plotters staring down a Sunday deadline to reinstate the deposed democratically elected president, analysts say Moscow and Beijing are also paying attention and looking for opportunities to widen their influence. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington.
This is becoming a sadly familiar image in West Africa. A group of military officers, unhappy over poor security and bad governance, imprison the country's leader, take over the airwaves, and declare themselves in charge. That's what happened in 2021 in Mali, later that year in Guinea, in 2022 in Burkina Faso, and last month in Niger. Coup spokesman, Colonel Major Amadou Abdrakmane. Today, 26 July 2023, he says, we, the forces of defense and security, reunited as the National Council for the Safeguarding of the Country, have decided to put an end to the regime, which you know. But optics aside, this West African coup is different and has Washington watching hour by hour as it sees whether frantic diplomacy will bring the deposed president, for whom the State Department has expressed unwavering support, back to power. That's because Niger is a key U.S. partner in fighting Islamic extremism in the Sahel, with a critical U.S. drone base and hundreds of U.S. troops in the country. VOA spoke this week with the nation's ambassador to the U.S. about the situation.
Less than 2 weeks ago, we had here a team of militaries for a meeting with the United States authorities. We went together to the Pentagon. We went together to the State Department. A week later, we're doing bad. What does this mean? It doesn't make any sense at all.
Analysts note that this fragile, resource-rich region is also in the crosshairs of other major powers, with Russian mercenary group Wagner increasing its foothold in neighboring countries. Sean McFate is a professor at Syracuse University and at the National Defense University.
This is a proxy war, and there's been an ongoing proxy war in Africa for the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, at least. It's sort of a new scramble for Africa. But here, the external forces are the United States, Russia, and China.
The State Department said they haven't seen proof that Russian mercenaries were involved, but said they will likely try to capitalize on the instability. Spokesman Matthew Miller.
I would not be surprised to see Wagner attempt to exploit this situation to their own advantage, as they've attempted to exploit other situations in Africa to their own personal financial advantage, as well as their attempt to expand their influence on the continent.
McFate says he doubts the putschists in Niamey will bend to pressure from Washington or the West.
A lot of Africans don't see the United States as a committed partner. I think that the opportunities for carrots and sticks from Washington are limited, and they're frankly being challenged by Russia and China.
Western nations, including the U.S., immediately stopped aid to the landlocked country. The ECOWAS regional body gave the coup leaders a Sunday deadline to reinstate the president and a threatened force if they don't comply. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Hundreds of migrants are outside the Roosevelt Hotel in the center of Manhattan in New York City. The hotel operates as the Migrant Processing Center for city shelters. But shelters are full now, and migrants are sleeping on sidewalks as they wait for help. Evgeny Maslov has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Food and water for migrants in Midtown Manhattan, in what is becoming a familiar sight in New York City. Since late July, thousands of migrants have been bused from Texas to New York and other U.S. states. With shelters full, migrants are sleeping outside of the Roosevelt Hotel, a processing center for the city's shelters. Jean Carlos Vasquez is a migrant from Venezuela.
It's been a few hours since I arrived. They gave me water, some apples, and other food. But no one has answered any questions I had. They just gave me a ticket with my number in line.
Migrants mostly come from Africa and Latin America. Most of them don't speak English and don't know what to do. As many were told at the border, they'll get shelter in New York. Natalia and Maxim Subotiny are from Russia. They hope to get political asylum in the U.S. After having spent 3 months in Mexico, they made it to New York.
At the Roosevelt Hotel, they told us, come here tonight. You'll have a room to sleep in. You won't sleep in the street, yet the line doesn't move at all.
New York authorities say about 90,000 migrants have arrived here from the southern border in the last year.
Yes, absolutely, there's been an increase, but to see that we are still operating with the mentality of emergency response, as opposed to having better plans put in place, has been incredibly distressing to see.
Activists are pushing to expedite temporary work permits for migrants, so they can have money to buy food and accommodations. New York City Mayor Eric Adams inspects shelters regularly, and for months he has appealed to the Biden administration for help. City shelters are full, and the city spends millions of dollars on migrant support.
We need help. We need help, and it's not going to get any better. From this moment on, it's downhill. There is no more room. I was at the Roosevelt on Saturday, and I went there on Sunday. The lined up around the block. It's just not sustainable.
On this night, over 100 migrants spent the night outside the Roosevelt Hotel. The mayor's office promises to find at least a temporary solution in the coming days. But without federal help, they say it'll be tough. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, and Rice, VOA News.
Marine experts are warning that Australia needs to do more to protect one of its greatest natural treasures after the United Nations recommended the Great Barrier Reef not be placed on a list of World World Heritage sites in danger. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
United Nations scientific advisers say that Australia has taken positive steps to protect the Great Barrier Reef since a UN monitoring mission visited Queensland in March 2022. But at its meeting in Paris Monday, the UNESCO World Heritage Committee stressed that the reef remained under serious threat. It wants Australia to report on progress to enhance the reef's long-term resilience by February 1 next year. Australia's government says the UN report is confirmation. It is acting on climate change and working hard to protect the reef. The reef spans 2,300 kilometres down Australia's northeastern coast and covers an area about the size of Japan. Experts fear that the arrival of an El Niño weather pattern, a naturally occurring climate phenomenon that often brings warmer conditions, will make the oceans even hotter. Coral responds to excessive heat by expelling the symbiotic algae that give them their brilliant colours and most of their energy. It is a damaging process called bleaching. Associate Professor Bill Leggett, a coral biologist from the University of Newcastle in New South Wales, state tells VOA that another bleaching event off northeastern Australia is predicted.
We're already seeing a marine heat wave on the Great Barrier Reef where temperatures are above what we normally expect to see. So certainly the vast majority of predictions are saying we're going to have another mass bleaching event next year, early next year. The reefs in Florida in the US are already undergoing bleaching. Ocean temperatures around the world are well above what we've seen in historical records that we have.
Australia says it's spending millions of dollars to improve water quality on the Great Barrier Reef, which has been damaged from pesticides and fertilizers running off from farms, as well as industrialization, overfishing, and the coral-eating crown of thorns starfish. Officials in Canberra have said more ambitious targets to cut Australia's emissions have also been set. Leggett says even more must be done to protect one of Australia's greatest natural treasures.
The Great Barrier Reef is one of the most well-managed reefs in the world, but it is being threatened. They're really the canary in the coal mine in terms of all ecosystems around the world, coral reefs. They are sensitive to climate change and we see the impacts on them first. If we want to have the reef there for our children and our grandchildren, we really need to act immediately.
The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization can list a World Heritage site as being in danger to encourage corrective action. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, we thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has assumed the presidency of the UN Security Council for the month of August and will focus on two of the Biden administration's top foreign policy priorities, combating food insecurity and defending human rights. We know without a shadow of a doubt it is within our power to feed the world and end famine, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield said at the start of the U.S. tenure.
But to do so, we must root out conflict-induced food insecurity. Around the world, hostilities breed hunger. Fighting breeds famine. And we see this in places like Yemen and Sudan and Syria and elsewhere. And of course, in Ukraine, where President Putin's forces have weaponized food. Russia has launched a full-scale assault on the world's breadbasket, and it is dead set on depriving the world of Ukraine's grains. Conflict-induced hunger is a pressing matter of international peace and security, and the Council must take action.
Over the month, led by the United States, the Security Council will look at ways UN member states, civil society, and the private sector can strengthen, coordinate, evaluate food security initiatives, and eliminate famine. Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield called the issue of food insecurity deeply personal, since addressing the issue has motivated her work work throughout her career. Galvanizing partners on the problem of food insecurity is necessary to solving it. Another top priority for the United States is elevating human rights at every opportunity. One way will be by including civil society briefers in the Council's meeting.
We must continue to give voices to the voiceless. We must continue to tell the stories of those who are not free, and that will be done in the Council during our month.
Additionally, during August, the United States will preside over briefings and consultations on a range of issues relevant to international peace and security, including regularly scheduled meetings on ISIL, Lebanon, Libya, the Middle East, Syria, Yemen, Ukraine, and Mali. There is no doubt the challenges before us will be great, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. But if we come together, we can take on the issues of our time.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.